Okay, welcome everybody.
Thank you.
I think we have one light off too many. Should we close that one?
This one has the food.
Oh, that has
yes, this one.
All right, fine.
You should close that one?
Okay, so welcome everybody. Tonight is November 18th, 2023. Okay, it took me a week to get that right. And this is the second lecture of, we started with the French Revolution. Tonight, mostly, we're going to be talking about Napoleon. So Napoleon is very, very key to the revolution because he kept the revolution going. I just wanted to see. Okay, we mentioned just last week, just very, very quickly, the French Revolution had four parts to it. The first part was this National Assembly, and that was an assembly called by King Louis the 14th. And King Louis the 14th, he was bankrupt, basically, and he had to get more money from people, and the first place he went to was his nobles and the clergy, the first two estates, and he said, nope, how about give me some money, pay some taxes, and they said no. So then he said, all right, I need more money from the people, and he called this National Assembly, and basically they had a big issue on how are we voting, because the first two assemblies, the clergy and nobles, which was estate one and two, they had a combined total of about 250,000 people, and then estate three, which was all the people of France, they had about 25 million people. So, of course, the first two estates wanted a vote. Each estate gets one vote. And the people, of course, said, this is ridiculous. No, we want to vote by population. And basically, the king threw them out, and they met down the block on the tennis courts, and they came up with their own assembly. And at some point, the king invited them back. And then there was the first that was Bastille Day. Didn't we just have it recently, Bastille Day? And there was a big revolution, there was a big riots in the city, and basically the people took over, most of the nobles left, and they took the king and queen, Marie Antoinette was the queen, and they locked them up. And then came the legislative assembly, and that was going on for 2 years. After 2 years, things were still not going well. There was still like famines, and people didn't have food to eat. And they're trying to get this new republic going with the fraternity and liberty and brotherhood. And so they came up with a constitution. The only thing is as this was happening, they were being attacked from all the other countries, and the other countries were afraid that if this revolution is successful, each of their own countries will have issues. And then what happened is when the legislative assembly they got through a constitution, and that led to the convention. And at the convention, this is where it started the Reign of Terror. The Jacobins were from the poorer class, they were the more radicals. They were afraid of people from the outside, all the other nations. They were attacked by four or five major countries. And on the inside, they were afraid people who were going to hand over France to the outside powers. And you had the Reign of Terror, which is in the course of about 2 years, 73 to 75, they guillotined. That was they guillotined about 15,000 people. I forget, mostly by a person by the name of Robespierre, Maximilian Robespierre. And then finally, once they got all of the French army was able to stabilize, they were able to stop the outside war. So So the people of France just were so sickened of what the guillotine and anybody who disagreed with, you know, the convention, the people in charge, they were all killed. So they killed a lot of their political prisoners. They ended up killing the king and the queen. They guillotined them. They thought that they were trying to, you know, get help. They were, you know, talking or communicating with all these countries. So they put them, they killed them during this time. And finally, towards the end, they finally killed all the people in the public safety committee, which was all these people that were in charge killing other people. They had them guillotined. And then it led to a directory. And this was the next step that was going on. And from 1795 to 1799, it was better. There was no guillotine going on. They weren't killing each other. But still, the economy wasn't working. The people were out of work. They were going hungry. There was anarchy all over the place. And this is really where, this is where we left off. The reason why it ends at 1799 is that's where there was a, how do you say it, a coup d'etat? How do you say it? That was an overthrow. And then from then on, it was Napoleon himself. So that's where Napoleon's going to fit in. Okay, I think pretty much this is really what I, pretty much what I said as things were going on during these years from 1789 to 1799. This is a 10-year period. The first time that we really come into, well, okay, we'll just see, we'll start with Napoleon a little earlier. He joined the Military Academy on a scholarship. He's brilliant. We know him today as the world's brilliant strategist, war strategy, principles of war. He's being studied today on his war, how to run battles and how to make them. His two famous heroes were Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar. Maybe that's why, you know, trying to outdo Alexander the Great, it's, you know, that means you have to conquer a lot in order to do that. Maybe that's why you went to Russia. That's one of the reasons. The French River, okay, and then, fine. This is where he came from. He came from the island of Corsica. Okay, he was a Corsican. His French was with an Italian accent. So they made fun of him in school, he's not speaking English properly, you know, like Israelis come here, they speak English. So, you know, like his French had an Italian accent to it. Okay? He was at age 24, by age 24 he was a general already. Tonight I'm not going to go through all of his wars, because every war that he did was just brilliancy in terms of how he captured his enemies. I would want to say is that he was very instrumental in putting down, in 1792, there was again riots in the street. And the convention got some officers with armies to put down the rebellion. And one of the officers who was given a little army to put down in Paris to put down the rebellion was Napoleon. And they quickly saw the value of this person. He knew how to put down rebellions. And eventually, within a very short time, he was made actually into a general. By 24, he was a general. And he went on from 1795 on. This is going to be his Italian campaign. He's going to be very successful in northern Italy and southern Italy. We're going to come back to that, because as he's coming across all these places, he's coming in contact with Jews. So really, growing up, he probably never even saw a Jew, or he never realized it was a Jew. He had no interactions with Jews whatsoever. Okay, and that's, so he, where am I up to? Okay, he was, when he, during the 1795-96, he was, there was this whole big coalition in Austria, Prussia, and basically he was able to really undo, fight off all the coalitions, and basically break up, you know, the Holy Roman Empire. He put that to rest. He made many places, he actually annexed it to France. Other places, other countries, he had them as allies. And this was all before 1799, before he actually took over. He returns in 1797 from his Italian campaign. He's a hero because he basically overtakes Italy and he overtakes Austria. And now, you know, that he's really a hero. In 1797 or 1798, he decides to go to Egypt, which we're going to talk about more, but for 2 years he's in Egypt. Why does he want to take Egypt? I mean, Egypt, the entire Middle East, we're talking about Egypt, Palestine, that area. And the reason is, well, I guess, twofold. First of all, I think he wanted just to conquer the world, but his main enemy always was, and he was never able to conquer it, was England. So he wanted to disrupt the English trade system. So he figured if he can get a hold of Egypt, that would hurt very much England's trade routes, you know, because they got from, you know, the only way to get, that's that he felt he could disrupt them. He was largely unsuccessful. He had his battles inland were successful, but the English fleet came in and destroyed his fleet. So, you know, he was really stuck there without any, you know, way to get supplies. And basically when he heard in 1798, 1799, that there was more trouble in France, so he basically left his army there. He says, you know, we'll figure it out. Get back home, figure it out. And he quickly, with a one ship or whatever, with a few men, made it back to France. And that's when he helped overthrow the government. Oops, I don't know what I just did. Okay, wrong button. Okay, so he comes back to France and everything is a mess. Now, France worked very hard. We're talking now, this is like the fourth stage, and they already have a constitution. They already have a way of governing. They had the directorate, which they have like five different lead people, and underneath there were two houses, an upper house and a lower house. And this was all made up in their constitution. So he comes back and everybody is still like miserable. The people are still poor and it's just, everything is just very, very not working. So he comes in and he decides, you know what, I'm taking over. So he goes ahead and this coup d'etat, I guess that's what they call it, and he is a military leader, and he, by military force, he basically takes over the government. And he says, I have to do this in order to restore law and order. And that's basically what he does. He comes in and he basically makes himself the top consulate. And everything ultimately really is working, is under his control. So yes, it's supposed to be a republic, but he decided that that's it. In order for things to work, he put himself in charge. Okay, now he's the man in charge. Now, this is a quote from himself. I closed the gulf of anarchy and brought order out of chaos. I rewarded merit, regardless of birth or wealth, which is amazing, because, you know, everything before then was your friends and, you know, your nobility, what family you're from. I abolished feudalism, restored equality to all, and even Jews, which is huge. regardless of religion, before the law I fought, the decrepit monarchies of the old regime, because the alternative was the destruction of all this. I purified the revolution. All right, so what happened? So for 3 years, he's working he's fixing everything up. He's getting everything together. He's making the civil code. He's working the courts. He's building up France, all these different things. And in 1802, he has a vote. And he asked the people, he was acting as emperor, temporary emperor. And he asked the people, do you want me to be emperor for life? And he won the vote. All the people in France said, yeah, we want him, he's our man. So in 1802, he had a flair thing to do. Whatever he did with flair. He was an amazing publicist, and he knew how to get people into things. He created these ideas of giving people medals and honors for war acts that he'd done. There was a battle where he was having a hard time getting people. It was a dangerous, battle that they had to do. And he called it a different name. He called it, these are the men of the courageous men group. And by calling it a different name, he got people, yeah, that's it, He built up this nationalism. There was this nationalism, this love for the land, and he knew how to do it. He knew how to give proper honor and to make things like great. He's going to do it to the Jewish people too. He's going to create a Sanhedrin for the Jewish people. We'll discuss it. So one of the things he did is, in order to give credence to himself as an emperor, he calls the Pope to come in and coronate him. Now, before Napoleon became emperor, during this entire revolution, because the revolution was against the old order, they actually kicked out the priests. They confiscated all the land. They closed down all the churches. We'll get to this. And the Jews were also lumped in the same thing. If religion is out, so it's out on all of them: Protestants, Calvinists, Jews, everybody was out. One of the things that Napoleon did is he brought back the church. He allowed the churches to be open. He did something which is brilliant, but instead of it being its own thing, the church is opened. And all of the salaries of all the priests are going to be determined by the government, and the government will pay their salaries.
Ooh.
So this was it's him. He's pro-religion. He's pro-religion. He's going to do this for the Jews as well. He's going to make these things called consistories, and these consistories are going to be a huge impact on the Jews in France. And in all the areas that he conquers, we'll see how it plays out. Directly, a tremendous cause to reform. This is one of the things that he does. So so what happens at his coronation? So he gets the Pope, and the Pope is there, and there's like thousands of people. There's a 400. Let's just see if I have it over here. 5,000 onlookers, a 400 voice choir. Mm. This is the scene to be. It says that 5,000 people were there, waiting an entire day to get their seat in the rain. To be there for this. The Pope is ready to give him the crown, and he's ready to start the speech. And then right before the Pope gives him the crown, Napoleon takes the crown and puts it on his own head. Mm. So there was a lot to that. That's for Kavana. That's to show that, yes, I need you here to but after all said and done, I'm over you. You're not over me. But that was something that Napoleon did in order to show himself as the new Caesar. now he's coronated as emperor, and now he's like one of the, but he was so different than the others, because like you saw what he did. He's building a new country, but he's doing it. He's trying to make this country really with the ideals of the revolution, which is everybody's equal, right? And it's going to be a very, very, very big, it's going to be very hard for the French people to view the Jews as equals. And it's not going to go so easy. I think I got everything here that he said. Francis, Pope said, as the Pope said, receive your imperial crown. Napoleon unexpectedly interrupted him by taking the crown and put it on his own head. Okay, that's what he did. As emperor, Napoleon created a civil code, basic laws, much like the constitution, to run his empire. So it wasn't like, which is also amazing, because as an amazing general as he was, he was also he was an amazing government leader. He did this himself. He was actively involved in making these laws. He wanted to destroy any type of feudal hierarchical order, no more three estates. Nobility and clergy lost all their privileges. We saw last week that they had privileges, they didn't have to pay taxes, and they collect tithes from the people, and they had their own lands, and these were all done away with. Equality of opportunity declared, religious toleration. Civil code also recognized equality of all citizens, and he did open up government careers to to more people to be involved. Okay, so this in this way he was continuing the revolution. The fact that he became emperor and took away the elections, so that was like not really, but sometimes they needed to do that. I wonder, like in my own mind, you know, after World War I, Germany was a very democratic country, right? It was a democratic country, the Weimar Republic. And what ended up happening is that Hitler came in and he was voted in, and he never had a majority. But after he was voted in, and there was they burnt down the Reichstag, they made a fire. Next thing is emergency things, and Hitler became but the Weimar Republic had tremendous problems. I mean, there was like a 1,000,000% inflation. It was just crazy. I wonder if to jumpstart the Weimar Republic, if some normal person would have come in and just, you know, got everything in order, it probably may have had a different ending in Germany. Mm. Okay, but he came in and he took all the ideals. He was the man. He was able to get things going. He beautifies Paris. He turns the loo, I don't know if it says it here, he either fixed up the loo, and he fixed up, made parks all over, museums, really, really built up, made Paris the most beautiful city. Now, as an emperor, you know, some things you don't particularly like, especially if your press, your newspapers, don't say too many nice things about you. So of the 73 newspapers of the time, he closed down 60 of them.
Wow.
You know, but okay, I mean, just, you know. We also wish we can do that to our newspapers today, right? Most of our newspapers we don't agree with anyway. Okay, Napoleon founded the Bank of France, Central Bank. He also put into one bank, creating, okay, so he actually controlled the monopoly on the banking system. So it would help if somebody who knows what he's doing, and he has the resources to do it, he can get the economy going. So not only did he start with his own country, but of course he's trying to make an empire out of this, tries to make peace with other countries. He would go into, and during his reign, he would go into war with Spain, Austria, Prussia, Switzerland, Netherlands, Italy, and Russia, just to name a few. From 1803 to 1815, that's that's the wars would be for these 12 years. Up until 1812, he was on top. And we'll see is the last, that was the Russia is really what really did him in. Okay, in 1805, this was the war that made France. He's emperor, and it was the coalition, I believe this was the second coalition that was going up against him. And they were totally, totally outnumbered. And they had him outnumbered, outmanned, out everything. And in brilliant, brilliant maneuvers, he won this war. And not only did he win this war, that's, you know, he, that's it. He now was like ruler over Europe and all these different countries. He was able to control, either he annexed some of them or many of them became part of his empire. Again, he was a master general. Okay. Okay. By the way, he needed some money also. So one of the things he did is he made the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. So we here in America are beneficiaries to Napoleon. You know. Okay. Right. So he really, I think he basically gave up on America. It was not in his sights. It was like, and that's why you take a look in America, there's no, pretty much no French. Maybe in Canada a little bit, but outside of Canada, South America is like all between Portuguese and Spain. And Louisiana Purchase, he was the one that sold it. Okay, so now this is what Europe looked like in 1812. So this is France, and he had everything with the exception of Portugal and Great Britain. At some point he did have Sweden, but that didn't happen for too long. And at some point also Russia, he had some sort of a deal with Russia. And everything was going great for him, but one of the issues were with Great Britain. You see, he wanted to undo Great Britain, and he really couldn't because Great Britain had a much better navy than his fleet. So there was, you know, he wanted to make a blockade on Europe to stop, to hurt Great Britain. But he wasn't really able to. And then he found out that there were certain countries that were cheating, that they were not listening to his blockade. And that's where the trouble began. Russia wasn't listening, Sweden wasn't listening, and that's, you know, he got into wars with them over this. There's a better picture you get to see. This is Napoleon's empire, so he annexed these countries over here. These were states under Napoleon's control. Okay, we're going to see he's going to give a lot of these to his family members. I think he had 9 siblings. No, and his brothers. Sisters are going to rule them all, different areas. Here they are. Okay, so he had Joseph Napoleon was the king of Spain. He made Louis Napoleon, his younger brother, king of Holland. Eugene Napoleon, kingdom of Italy. Elise Napoleon's sister was Grand Duchess of Tuscany. And this is the one that we're going to come back to. Is Jerome Napoleon, and he was the king of Westphalia, which is over here, which is Westphalia.
Remember, they're right back to the kingship of what they originally tried to wipe out in the first place.
Correct. However, they're a kingship looking to make everybody equal.
Except for the rulers of the countries.
Right, no, there's no more rulers. He's destroyed, right, okay. You happen to be right. You're an emperor, how could you? But he looked at it as he got rid of all the old order. All the, you know, kings with their divine rights to rule and all with their nobles and that with all their, you know, special...
And his family's going to do it the nice way.
Right, but his family doesn't have, like, royalty. That was part of the problem, is that his family was never really accepted as a king. They were a king forced on the people. And the people are going to reject all of these kings as soon as they can. But at the time, his family was putting forth the ideals of the French Revolution. So those ideals of everybody's equal and freedom, and the old order, there's no such thing as the divine right of kings. That doesn't exist. I'm a king because I conquered you or you vote me in, but I'm here to run an army, run a government, like what we see today, the kings of today. This is how he was running his entire empire here. We're going to come back to Jerome Napoleon, because Jerome Napoleon is going to have an area of what today is Germany. Okay, but this is all going to, by the way, everything is now, and after Napoleon falls, everything is going to just be put, you know, they're going to put France back, and they're going to, you know, put all the countries back. The Holy Roman Empire will not exist anymore. Okay, so they're going to break it down into different countries, but in here, in Jerome Napoleon, it was called the Westphalia. This area was called Westphalia, which today is Germany. He's going to have a consistory, which is a government area that controls the religion, and there's going to be a person, if you may have heard of him, his name is Isaac Jacobson, who's going to lend Jerome Napoleon a lot of money, and he's going to have a lot of influence in that consistory. And his ideas of a new modern religion, which the reformers call him the father of reform, for almost, I don't know if it's 10 years, but for 5-7 years, this consistory is going to be in charge of all the Jews in Germany, and under this Isaac Jacobson, and it's going to be a very, very, a jump start for the reform movement, and that's huge. This, okay. Okay, but this is what Europe looks like now.
Rabbi, it just shows you how HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. Yeah, he wants something, it's going to get done.
Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the earth.
Right, yeah. And this whole thing, again, you have to realize, in his empire, he now has he has millions of Jews. Not directly, because again, this is states under Napoleon's control. This is Poland. Poland is now under France. France is pushing the ideals of equality and liberty. So all the rebbes and rabbis and Rosh Hashivas are going to have to deal with now this thing is, you know, if Jews are second-class citizens and you don't want to be like your goyim because they're a bunch of drunken peasants, you know, then you look down at them. But if now... And they don't want you, and you don't want them, so what do? You sit and learn Torah, you do mitzvahs, you're different. But now, if society is opening up and saying, join us, that's going to be a very, very big challenge. So who do you back? Do you back Napoleon? You'll live better. You won't be, there won't be the anti-Semitism, you know, won't be the harsh killing and putting down and exile, and that you won't have. But the other, you know, like Yaakov Davin to Hashem, Hatzileini miyat Achi, miyat Esav. Save me from my brother and save me from my Esav. Save me from Esav when he's acting like a brother and he's being nice to me and he wants to get close to me. I don't want that. That's not good for me. Why? That's not good for me either. And save me from Esav when he wants to kill me. So this is going to be the decision that the Jewish people are going to have to make. You know, And once in 1815 when they conquered and Napoleon's not around anymore, but that you can't put the genie back in the bottle. That's it. It's out there. And every country now has these ideas fermenting, and it had effects. Every monarch had to deal with this, these new concepts, ideas that are going around the world. Okay, he actually, like I mentioned before, he actually went into the Middle East. I would like to talk to you about that, because he thought without the British, his plan was, we're going to see what his plan was about Eretz Yisrael and the Jewish people there. He was in Egypt. It was a disaster for him, but nobody knew about it. He didn't have the press, he didn't have internet, you know. Nobody knew what a disaster it was there, so he got away with that. And then after that, okay, so again, in 1812, the eve of his campaign against Russia, this is what it looked like. Okay, so he's top of the world. He's got all of Europe, and that was it. Okay, his biggest rival was Great Britain. Okay, and he couldn't get to Great Britain without boats and the fleet of Great Britain. That was just too much for him. Okay, okay. Also, what undid, so one thing is that his empire was undermined by Great Britain, and also nationalism. You see, the nationalism that France had for their own country that helped them fight off all the foreign invaders, right, even before Napoleon got into power, and for sure after he got into power, that same nationalism, France was teaching to the whole world that to have this idea of nationalism, your country, you fight for your patriots and nationalism, you know, so that undid him also, because has all his brothers, you know, King of Spain, but nationalism in Spain was building. So like, why do I want foreign France to come over and take over Spain? I don't want, and Italy, and then Germany, and all these countries, this nationalism among the people was also brewing. They didn't want Napoleon as well.
The initial purpose of all this was a French Revolution to make it better for the people of France.
Correct.
How does then a great warrior, a person from
because
say,
they
I have to conquer everything to make it better for France?
Well, they yeah,
I mean,
but
that,
it started.
Maybe he needed a country or two to get
France,
some of their supplies, but now to take over all of this part of the earth for France to be better,
it sounds
like it's a lunatic.
They started with France. The coalitions, they started attacking France. France was attacked first. And now, you know, now he attacked and he won. Now they have all these places. And, you know, he has enemies now. Now Great Britain, England, and France are at odds. And now he's using everybody to go against England. Right, look, Napoleon has an ego. He's not like, you know,
right,
you know, like the right.
Conquering became the issue as opposed
to
taking care of France.
Yeah. Okay, that was Napoleon. You know, it's a package deal. You know, you get a person. This is who he was. He was larger than life. He was looking for everything. Okay, so these are his three big mistakes. Which is one is the continental system, which is what I told you. He wanted to make a with boats. He wanted to make a blockade that England could not get any supplies from Europe. And if had he been successful with that, England would have, they don't have all their natural resources, they can't trade with Europe, and that's it. England would go down and he would conquer England as well. Then the next one, because Spain was also not into the blockade, they were dealing with England, so he conquered Spain and he put one of his brothers in. That never went well. That he always had trouble with them. The armies were never able really to get a strong hold in Spain, and he lost lots of thousands, tens of thousands of men in Spain. And the last thing that really did him in was the invasion of Russia. That was it. After that was it. Continental system, like I said, enabled blockade, but they ignored it. And seeking revenge, Britain wanted their own blockade, which hurt the French economy.
That was also the finishing blow with Hitler, when he just said, I gotta take Russia.
Yeah, okay.
And he was still taking this side, and then he said that side, and
I guess, again, like it all, Hashem puts it in mind of these people to do things that are, like, crazy, and, you know, okay. France attacks Spain, because, again, Spain was not into the blockade. But 6 years they never really had a firm control of Spain. It was guerrilla warfare all the time, and it hurt France. You know, you can't keep losing soldiers. Okay, invasion of Russia, that really did him in. He invades into Great Britain, and basically he ran out of. It got very cold. He made it all the way to Moscow. He was really hoping for peace. all the time he helped, he was hoping the Tsar would come and talk with him in peace. He made it all the way to Moscow, and the way the strategy of the Russians was something called the scorched earth policy. They never engaged him. What they did is, as they retreated, they burnt and destroyed everything. So he couldn't come, and he didn't have food and arms and everything on the way. They destroyed everything. He got to Moscow. He was in Moscow for a month, but he was there expecting any day the Tsar to come in, but he didn't. What they had done is, everybody left Moscow. There was nobody left in Moscow, except that they opened all the jails, and they took all the prisoners, and they said, go, you're free. What we would like you to do is, we want you to burn down Moscow. So they all were around, and they, you know, it was a big city, and every day they noticed different places were on fire. And they kept burning, making fires, burning things down. And they finally caught many of them, or most of them, just like, what are you doing? They realized, okay. But at that point, they weren't coming, and they had now they had to make the trek back. And winter started setting in. It was a particularly cold winter, just like the same particularly cold winter for the Nazis. It was just crazy cold. And as you can see here, he started with 600,000 troops, and he ends up coming back with about 40,000. He came back with about 40,000 troops. You can't lose 500,000 troops and like still maintain a strong army and everything. Just if you know, this is where how they went. Just the amount, even if it was in the summer with good weather, the fact that he made it to Moscow was just like unbelievable. Just the fact that he did it, made it there at all. Going there, he didn't have bad weather. The fact that he was able to go so far with his army, and what they did is they made like a cone for him. So his armies, all along the way, armies had to protect both sides. And finally, when they retreated, they kept retreating, and you know, everybody kept coming back, and it was very, very cold, and they couldn't, just, there was, people froze to death, they couldn't come back, and there was a lot of also guerrilla warfare. You know, the Ukrainians usually don't take things sitting down. You know? So the Cossacks would do raids against his army. And he came back. It was just 40,000. When he came back, I don't think he made it back to France. I'm not sure if this was the time, but he was like the Allied army beat him back to Paris before he did. He was like about 3 miles out with whatever army he had. And again, they were all trying to surround him and capture him. And anyway, they ended up going, they came into Paris, France, and at that point, they were greeted with open arms. And they beat Napoleon back home, and they took him, and first they sent him to an island. Okay, Paris was captured in 1814. He was exiled to the shores the island of Elba, off the coast of Italy. Here's Elba, off of Italy, and that's where he was. He was there for, I'm not sure, was it a year, a few months, and he escaped. And a few months later, he escaped, came back to France. So they heard he escaped, they came back to France. So they sent the army to go ahead and arrest them again. So the army took one long look at him, and he said, "Viva the Emperor!" You know, and they all joined him. And now he had an army again.
Who put him on the island?
The Allies, all the other.
He was captured.
So he was captured. They put him on an island. I guess they didn't want to kill him because that would just, you know, the entire Europe. Again, for the past 20 years, mainly then for 10 years, it's just been turned upside down. War after war with different people in charge and things. It was crazy. They just wanted to, let's end this. And they figured if they kill him, then it wouldn't, France would not take it, you know. So it's better just throw him in an island and keep him there. He escapes from the island, comes back to France, and the next thing you know is the French army, they're following him again. So he said he had about 100 days. He was 100 days, and he was, you know, he had an army. But all the European powers, they said, like, enough is enough. And they all came back again. And again, the famous, the Battle of Waterloo. Waterloo is like in northern France. Again, they surrounded him. And again, they captured him. But this time, they did not put him in an island close by. They put him in an island called St. Helena, a British island off the coast of Africa. I like threw him in the middle of mamish nowhere. He only lived another 6 years. He had stomach cancer. In 1821, he died. And that's it. They took his body back to France. He was buried in France. So that ended the revolution. That ended. Now what do you do with everything else? Now how do you clean up this mess? You know, now everything is a mess, you know. Every government, what do you do with France? So there was a meeting in Vienna, the Congress of Vienna. And basically, the idea was, is let's try to go back to the way it was as much as possible. And we don't want to make any one country too strong. They felt that if there would be a balance of power in Europe, that somehow would keep the peace. And they, I guess they were sort of right, because it did work for some. They left France intact with a much weaker France. They put Louis XIV's brother, Louis XVI, he took over France, and they were back to a monarchy. Now, of course, France is not going to be the same monarchy. It's not going to be. They have a new civil code, and they have it's a new France, a new reality. All of these other countries also, they're going to have to deal with this new reality of freedom, of freedom.
What happened, Rabbi, to the family members
I don't think they killed them. They they threw them off.
Exactly.
They didn't have to kill. I mean, these people, they weren't like, when they were ruling the countries, I don't think they were ruling them and killing people. They were in charge, and people had to listen. I'm sure he had a French army or a French presence or the fear of France that they were ruling with. Once France fell, so that's it. They packed out.
What year is this?
1815. Actually, it really started a little bit earlier, 1814, when they captured him. But it took a few months, you know, they had to figure out what to do with everybody. So now the map of Europe also changed. Okay, so they try to make it a balance of power. The Netherlands are formed, Sweden gains independence, Holy Roman Empire ceases to exist. The leaders that were deposed by Napoleon, they're reinstored. France is weakened but remained intact. And this is again, you know, what type of a... This would have what it was looked like in the new France. And each of these countries that their leaders were taken out, they're back in power now. Okay, and this is...
What's the other big purple one on the right of
France, Habsburg. This is Austria.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Austria.
Austria is so significant.
Yeah, Austria. And then Prussia's going to soon, you know, cease to exist. And it's going to come into Germany. And then Germany, Austria, and Italy. I'm sorry, Russia, Austria, and Ottoman Empire. This is going to be the first World War, right? From here, this whole thing is going to be. But that's not till 1912.
Well,
it was quite a number of times. You had your wars, but nothing on any grand scale until then. So you have a. You're gonna have 100 years without a major war. Okay. What else do we have? They got all governments together, worked out the meeting that did not lead to war. European nations agree to preserve peace, and it does last for several years.
Well,
okay. And that's all she wrote. So next week, I'd like to do. I'm gonna go back to Napoleon, and throughout his wars and where he was, how it directly related to the Jews.
Mm.
So we're going to go first the French Revolution and the Jews. What were the Jews before the French Revolution? What happened to them during? And then when Napoleon, during his wars, when he met the Jews in his battles as emperor, and that's going to be the next one, the French Revolution and the Jews, or Napoleon and the Jews. And so we're going to have it directly related to us, and then afterwards, it affected the Jews in many, many ways, and it's going to spider out in different countries, and different things are going to happen. All right, thank you so much for coming.
Last reminder, next week we're going to be in the shul in the ladies section, same time, partnerships.